com as we welcome in former NHL scout and GM, ace analyst scout for TSN. Craig Button joins us a little bit later than usual, Butts. I like it. What's going on? How are you?
Yeah, we had a hole with March Madness going on, and thanks for being accommodating. We had a couple of things with the Leafs pregame. You know the Toronto Sports Network, right? You know how that goes. Like, so the Leafs are playing a game on St. Patrick's Day, so I got to hand out grades on their trade acquisitions, and then we had a Sports Center, and anyway, thanks for accommodating me, but there's Toronto and the rest of the country.
Well, Oilers fans love to hear that, but I would say though, Edmonton, Toronto in a Stanley Cup final would be unreal. Oh my goodness, for fan bases chirping, it would be electric. I would feel for the fan base that lost though, because it'd be relentless from the other side forever. But speaking of Toronto,
I will say this though, real quick, Jason. I'll tell you what: if Toronto and Edmonton played in the Stanley Cup final, I think Calgary Flames fans would root for Edmonton. I think Montreal Canadiens fans would root for Edmonton. I think it would be Toronto versus the rest of the country.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Yeah, I could see that, because people were just, a lot of other fans are like, I just want the 67 curse to live on in my lifetime. That's what they want. I get it. I totally get it, because there is a Leaf-centric at times. There's no question. And I get it. There's a big market. I understand all that. But, and they're a good team.
Yeah, we do. They are, now, but Jason, if the curse ends, they're not a story anymore. They need the curse to go on. Does anybody talk about the Red Sox or the Cubs anymore? They won. Now it doesn't matter. You're better off being cursed forever.
I said at the time, Craig, I was one. I didn't like what Carolina did at the deadline, considering what Toronto and New York and New Jersey and Boston, all of the big additions those teams made. I found that Carolina, who was a good team, but they didn't do enough to add. And now, unfortunately, that piles on because Svechnikov is out for the season. With him, do you take them out of a legit cup contender now with his injury?
I think you have to. And, I was of the same mind as you, Jason, on trade deadline day. It was it's hard to say that a team that is so good didn't do enough at the trade deadline to improve their team. But that's where I found myself. And certainly with Pacioretty out, and they had cap space, and, it was a good team. You can't anticipate Svechnikov getting injured, but there was an opportunity there, with Pacioretty's injury to mitigate against that. Pacioretty's injury. And imagine if you would have done that, then it might have softened the blow a little bit with Svechnikov's injury. They're an excellent defensive team. They have really good goaltending. But, I think they're stretched thin. They're already thin without Pacioretty. They're even thinner with Svechnikov out now. So I'm in agreement with you. It was a team that I looked at and said, they're really good. And what are they going to do? And they didn't do anything.
No, it's... And, man, it's just – I understand that, hey, they went big on Timo Meier. And, Frank Cervalli saying that he thought they actually offered a better package. So we'll see. I'd like to see what that package was, if indeed that's what San Jose elected to do or not. But, who knows? We'll have to find out. Now, there are some –
I want to interject okay. here because in all my years, and I've been around a lot of years, Jason, okay, I love when teams lose out on a player. They always offered a better package, which is basically implying that Mike Greer is an idiot. When we traded Jerome McGinley, I can't begin to tell you how many teams were saying, oh, we offered something way better than Jerome McGinley for Joe Nieuwendyk. We offered something. It's the oldest refrain in, I'll say hockey. It's probably an old sport. Oh, we offered something better. No, you didn't. Because if you offered something better, you would have made the deal. Stop talking like that.
Fair
Not
point.
You, them.
Yeah. No, that's a very fair point. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Because that's why I said, I want to see what this alleged deal was. Tell us what you offered that supposedly was better. We'll have to see. Now, when you're going through the grades of a lot of these teams, Matthias Ekholm, Oilers fans are tickled pink in what he has done since coming in for that team and how well he has played. It's interesting, him and Bouchard, they work together, and Bouchard does play better with veterans. Shocking. Most young guys, you give them a good veteran, it makes their life a lot easier, right? Bouchard used to joke with Keith. It was like, he just said, stay on your side of the ice, as simple as it was, and it made my life a lot easier. And it's also, though, I look at Edmonton, and Dave Manson last night was the most I've seen it with Ekholm here was where they really matched the Nurse against Dallas's top line, to the point where Nurse actually played only just under 19 minutes, but they played the majority of their minutes against Dallas's top line. And what Ekholm and Nurse give Edmonton now is an option. If you want, you can just say, we're going to go play each guy 22 minutes. They're going to be 44 minutes on the ice with those guys. Or we can now pick which matchup we want. It's a big advantage having another legit, you know, dominant defenseman.
Oh, it's a huge advantage. And, you know, Jason, me and you have talked about this, and others too. It's not just like we have propriety discussion rights on this. But Darnell Nurse, it eases the burden on Darnell Nurse. You know, I always say this about players. Can Darnell Nurse play 26 minutes a night? 20? Yeah, he can. Can he play against? But you're not just extending him, like, what's comfortable for Darnell? 22 minutes? I don't know. But, like, if he's playing 25, you've not only extended him three beyond what's best for him, but how many minutes before that does he start pacing himself and start trying to manage knowing that he's going to have to play more minutes? So with Ekholm there and the coaches having an ability to really get you into spots where you can maximize your abilities, I think that that's so key. So we talk about an addition of Matthias Ekholm. The addition of Matthias Ekholm extends to other players. For Evan Bouchard, it's nice for him to have that, that security blanket. It's also good for Darnell Nurse. It's also good for the coaches because you're not kind of holding your breath as you put somebody out there hoping nothing goes wrong. You're going, hey, we got this under control. Matthias can handle it. Darnell can go out there. And it just gets everybody into a settled state. So really, really, really important. And, you know, teams are made up of all kinds of different players. Not everybody's going to be a number one defenseman. Not everybody's going to be a number two defenseman or a second pair. But they're really, really important to what you're trying to do. And that's how good teams are able to compete for championships.
Craig Button Jones, Hampton Sports Leader, TSN 1260. Craig, was it a one-off? Or did we see the return of the Jonathan Quick that we've seen all year last night in Vegas?
Yeah, well, listen. Jonathan Quick has had, like, let me tell you how bad Jonathan Quick has been. He's been below average. So, like, you know what? Like, I watched him in his first game for Vegas against Montreal. And, yeah, he won the game. He was sloppy there. It was the same things you see. He doesn't have the same abilities that he once had. He overcompensates. He's a great competitor. He's always going to be a great competitor. But when you're not as quick, you overcompensate. And then because you're overcompensating, it creates vulnerability. Jonathan Quick has got lots of vulnerability in his game. Listen. There's no way that LA Kings team is a really good team, a really good defensive team. And there was no way that Rob Blake was looking to trade Jonathan Quick. But if he wanted to be serious about his team's chances, he had to upgrade the goaltending. And that meant that Jonathan Quick had to go off because he simply was not good enough. If I'm the Vegas Golden Knights, I'm not counting on Jonathan Quick to be my guy. But I think they got bigger problems in that net.
100%. But the LA Kings, Craig, they just keep rolling, and you know they look pretty good. What impresses you most about the Kings?
Three things. Number one is that, you know, when you start to look at the way they play the game at a tempo, pace, and intensity, it's all the way through their lineup. You know, it starts, you know, with Kopitar, goes through to Danault. You know, you watch Fiala, you watch Arvidsson, you know, Grundstrom. They got a hard team to play against because they're quick, fast, and I call it after it and on it. They're after it all the time, and they're on it, offensively and defensively. That's number one. Number two, they have a really good defense group. It only strengthened with Gavrikov. The goaltending obviously got better with Korpisalo. But that's a good defense group there that can play. And they can move the puck quickly, and they can defend. And they're really organized in their defensive play. They don't run around a lot. They're efficient, and they move forward. And then you start to look at their ability to create advantages with their speed and their pace. They're a quick team. They're a fast team. So, you know, they force opponents to be uncomfortable. And then because they force opponents to be uncomfortable, they create opportunities for themselves. And that's a hard team to play against because it's not just one line, it's not just two lines. They are consistently after you throughout the course of a game. And so, you know, like before they got the goaltending and Gavrikov, before they got Korpisalo and Gavrikov, you know, I said this is a good team. Now they've strengthened their team in two areas, you know, upgraded the blue line, you know, strengthened the blue line and upgraded the goaltending. I'm on the Los Angeles Kings bandwagon. I think that they're a really good team, and they're going to be a tough team to beat in the West.
The Central Division, the Avalanche, obviously we know when they're healthy, they can be pretty good. But, you know, we don't know if they're going to get Landeskog back or not. And so without him, I definitely think they're vulnerable come playoff time. Right? Doesn't mean that they'll lose, but they're vulnerable. They're not like, as Daryl Sutter said last year, that'd be a waste of 8 days to meet them in the first round, right? Like, they're not that team. You know, there's no Kadri, there's no Landeskog. Like, you know, they don't have Kemper, and Darcy Kemper up until he had the vision problems. He was pretty good for them. So what do you make of Colorado and, even Ottawa? Like, Ottawa came from one unreal save from Johansson in the last second from tying that game last night.
They did, but you watch the game against Toronto. They were really tight. They were good. Listen, you know, last year, to your point, Daryl was right. Daryl was absolutely right. You know, you're going to waste 8 days. There is no clear-cut favorite in the West. And, like, you know, I think there's six teams that are capable, okay? And we can – I have Minnesota at six, okay? I have Minnesota at six. Dallas at five. Could they be four? You know, you got the next four teams there: Edmonton, Colorado if they're healthy, Los Angeles, and Vegas. You know what? I'm watching now, Jason. Last 2 weeks, I'm going to really watch the last 2-3 weeks of the season to see who's got their game in order, because I think it's going to come down to who has their game in order that's going to be able to go deeper in the playoffs. If you're trying to find your game when the playoffs begin, I think you're going to have a struggle against teams that are really already into the playoff space. And, you know, we talked about Minnesota, how well they're playing. We talked about Vegas. We talked about the Oilers. We talked about the Kings. You know, they're really playing well. And even if they're all playing well, there's still no favorite. But those are the teams, and I think it is wide open. And we keep continuously talking, well, if Colorado's healthy. They haven't been healthy all year. Like, what makes us think that when the playoffs begin, they're all of a sudden going to be healthy? I'm not so sure that's going to be the case.
The Edmonton Oilers, Stuart Skinner, he's been pretty consistent all year long. And I don't know if he'll knock out Matty Beniers, but he might find himself as a finalist for the Rookie of the Year this season. And really down the stretch, he's taken over the starter's job. He's going to have a sixth consecutive start here tomorrow afternoon in Seattle. You know, then I think Campbell's going to get one of the two games next week, Arizona or San Jose, and then one the following week when they play back-to-back. But this is clearly Skinner's team right now, Craig. And how do you think that alters things for Edmonton? Because if you look at their team numbers when he's played, you know, it's pretty impressive, especially their defensive numbers. Like in a lot of those games with Campbell, and I hate to say it, when you're playing behind the exact same team and your numbers are that different, a lot of it's got to go in the goaltender.
Jack Campbell's been one of the worst goaltenders in the league. Like, let's be straightforward here. He's been terrible. So, you know, Jay Woodcroft put the stake in the ground last week. Boston, Skinner. Saturday night in Toronto, Skinner. You know what? And Jay's talked about it. He's earned it. He's shown that he can carry the workload at the American League level. He's learning how to take the workload at the National League level. He's consistent. He's reliable. He's dependable. He's good. So what does it mean for the Edmonton Oilers? It gives him a better chance to win than the other guy. It's as simple as that. And this is what winning comes down to. Who cares what they signed him for? That's something to deal with in a separate matter. The bonus for the Edmonton Oilers is they have Stuart Skinner, and they don't have to worry about, you know, Jack Campbell finding his game. I'll be real quick on this. In 1971, the Montreal Canadiens had Phil Mir and Rogatien Vachon. Okay, they'd been part of Stanley Cup teams. They went in down the stretch. Sam Pollock, Al McNeil was coaching. They went down the stretch, and they said, we don't think we can win with these two guys. So Sammy Pollock basically said, he goes, well, why don't we call up Dryden? Like, let's call him up. Let's get him in there. And they were kind of, wow. He goes, well, you said to me you don't think we can win with these two guys. So if we think that, why would we play them? Let's call up Ken Dryden. Stuart Skinner has proven that he can take the load. He has proven that he can be reliable. he's the number one goaltender for the Edmonton Oilers, and I don't care how much Jack Campbell was signed for. I feel the same way about Matt Murray in Toronto. I don't care what he did in 2017. Their best goaltender is Samsonov. Edmonton's best goaltender is Skinner. That gives your team the best chance to win. That's who plays. End of story. Deal with all the other stuff at another day.
And lastly, Craig, there is the report that the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League is considering banning fighting. What do you make of it?
So, I mean, this is, what do I make of it? Do we have a couple hours to have a good discussion on this? We should have a round table on this, Jason. We really should. So we talk about fighting and everything, and we talk about trying to make the game safe and, you know, for young kids playing the game and, you know, providing an environment that's safe. You know, fighting, we look at the numbers. We know that fighting has been way down. We also know that fighting has continuously, you know, been argued that it's an outlet for the players. You know, so it depends what side of the philosophical argument you're on. The young players today growing up, fighting isn't part of their world. It isn't part of their thought that, like, this is part of the game. There's less and less of it everywhere. So I don't know if the Quebec League is just deciding that, like, you know what, the end of it is inevitable. Why don't we just end it now, right? I want to believe that that's the case. You know, we can continue to wait and say in 2 years' time or 5 years' time or 10 years' time, fighting will be out. But, you know, I think the Quebec League is just saying, hey, you know what? It's not something that's part of the game anymore. I was talking to Stéphane Leroux last week. I happened to be in Gatineau, and I was talking to Stéphane Leroux, and I think he told me that the 80th fight of the league this year, the 80th fight in the league this year happened like prior to the weekend series. And I think he told me there had been 1,100 30 years ago in the league. So, you know, you're down to 80 from 1,100. Obviously, fighting's dropped off. My guess is that they're just saying, you know what, it's going to keep dropping. We're just going to eliminate it. So, you know what, I guess it's a big discussion. Is it part of the game? Should it be part of the game? And, you know, there's a lot of people weighing in. That's my short answer. We need to have a roundtable on this and really go at it, because I have my own personal views on it, but I think that that's the rationale with the Quebec League at this point in time.
Well, Craig, we will get you on that, because I think it's definitely worthy of a discussion. I agree with everything you've said, that the numbers have gone down. To me, there's no reason to outlaw it then. That's my own version on it. The players have done it enough, so every now and then you have one. I think having it there in your background still has some players think twice, maybe not. I don't think you need to necessarily 100% ban it, but that's just my thought, so we'll see where it goes on that one. Craig,
yeah,
have yourself.
I don't know if it'll be banned. Let me just say this real quickly. You know, banning it, I mean, you know, I read a comment. Somebody said, well, you can't ban accidents. You know, there's going to be accidents. You can have speed traps and you can have speed bumps and everything. You're going to still have accidents. But, you know, I think what they're saying is that, like, you know, if you want to fight, you can fight, like in baseball or football, but it's going to be an ejection. So you're never going to ban fighting, just like you're not going to ban fighting on the school playground or, you know, in you know, when the tension picks up in a bar or a nightclub. But at the same time, it doesn't mean you get to still have a drink in the nightclub. And I think that's what the Quebec League's doing. And whether the merits of it or whether it's a release or whatnot, I think that's the bigger discussion and one that we should have. And we should have a good discussion and debate on it.
Awesome stuff, Craig. Have a great weekend. We will chat with you next Friday.
We will. Thanks.